Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. We had took a little hiatus last week after a double podcast extravaganza week the week before, but this time we're back. And Mason, how are you doing?
Good. It's finally not winter here in Chicago. I know that sounds crazy to you, all you guys and guys and gals in Louisiana, but it was legitimately like 50 degrees a couple days ago. But now it's beautiful, so it's suddenly. It's about the time of year where the script flips, and it's super nice to be up in the north as opposed to the rest of the 8 months prior where it's miserable. Anyway, how about you?
I can't believe it took till June for this to happen. That's got to be a miserable time. I'm doing well. It's hot as balls here. In any case, let's move on with the Pelicans. Anthony Davis and David Griffin and company had a meeting in Los Angeles last week. The initial reports out of that meeting was that the meeting was productive, but Davis is unlikely to change his stance. Mason, do you feel like there's anything out of the ordinary there?
Nah, I mean, I think that's what we all expected. And I'm not here to deny or refute Shams or Woj. Like those are the guys that you trust for everything like this, but everyone's got their sources, and my gut would tell me that because Woj has never been in LeBron's camp, that Shams might get you getting his information from Clutch or AD's representation. And so that's always the message you expect to hear from them. It was never going to be a sudden change of heart. Does that mean that I think that the chances of AD staying with New Orleans are dead? No. I think it's certainly unlikely. But I don't think the chances are zero. But I mean, long story short, I don't think anyone should be surprised with how the responses went to that meeting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. There's alarms going off in the background. Maybe we should be surprised. It's foreshadowing that things are gonna go bad. No, I'm kidding. The meeting was, you know, as expected. The outcome was as expected, and because of that outcome, Griffin has now started taking calls, or I guess more accurately, he is engaged with other teams. He is now listening to offers, and this is where the true race begins. I want to touch upon a couple things just in and around Pelicans news lately. One of the funniest things that I saw last week was this idea being thrown out that Boston would no longer be interested in trading for Davis. Or I guess more accurately put, they would have a minimized interest. They don't really know where they're heading with Kyrie, and they kind of want to regroup with a youth movement, and therefore they are not that keen on acquiring Anthony Davis, to which I want to say bullshit. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
I think that's fair.
No, I mean, I really think, I don't think, I know. I know it's not true. It is unequivocally false. You can write that down. Boston has been very much engaged and been very patient with the whole Davis situation ever since he demanded his trade. And frankly, Danny Ainge has been pining over Davis for years. This is not an opportunity that they're going to forego. And even if we were looking at it from a pure common sense perspective, all 29 teams are interested in Davis. It's a matter on if they can acquire him or not. You tell me if Griffin calls any team, it's like, hey, you want Davis? They're going to like be like, nah, we're good. No, that's not going to happen. So I don't know. What did you make of that whole report, quote unquote?
I think we've approached maximum diminishing returns here, talking about 80 trade destinations without any more concrete evidence that we had in the weeks before. And so I feel like the general people, stories are starting to be made out of nothing. And anyone who has a source anywhere that, regardless of how credible, people aren't, I don't think people are making stuff up. Well, I don't think most people are making stuff up, but I do think that there is a subsection of people who have maybe a mid-level source or someone that they maybe trust, and they're just pushing stuff out there for the sake of pushing stuff out there. And I mean, we talked at length about how this Kyrie domino is going to be critical in the Anthony Davis trade negotiations, but to suggest that the Celtics are just suddenly less interested in pursuing a guy that they've been, as you said, after for a very long period of time at this point, I think is just silly. So that's pretty much where I stand.
I think you brought up a really good point about the level of exhaustion that people have reached discussing this trade situation ad nauseum. I mean, from a Pelicans perspective, we've been dealing with this since January, 18th? When was the trade request? The 18th, 19th, whenever that was. So it's been almost 6 months. It'll be 6 months by the time the draft comes around, basically, right? That the Pelicans are discussing, or Pelicans fans have been discussing, what to do with Davis. And we've unfolded and unearthed pretty much every rock and possibility. And I don't think we're particularly going to come up with something that is new or unique. It just kind of boils down to the same debates that we've been having. Oh, which package do you value better? What if they include this? What if they include that? Which I made the mistake of doing on Twitter today. After Shams tweeted out this whole, like, you know, Griffiths started to talk to other teams, I gave my power rankings of what I thought the trade packages might include. And I had Boston at the top, and I had a gap between Boston and New York, who had it at 2, and I had the Clippers at 3, the Lakers at 4, and the Nets at 5. I then kind of gave my thought process. First, I kind of like let that sit, and Matt Moore launched it into the ether, launched it into the Twitterverse, and all of a sudden my mentions are blowing up from fans of all 5 of those teams, which are ginormous markets, by the way. And, you know, each team upset at the rankings. That is
that is funny. I didn't think about that. That not only is that a hot topic in the NBA this month and even today with the report from Shams, but the fact that the markets you listed are Boston, New York, Los Angeles, New York. So good luck.
Yep. No, it's super fun. But in any case, a lot of name calling going on there. Probably deserved, but who cares? We call people names too, so it's all fun.
I would have said you could have just compounded by making the Bulls 6th for just no other reason than to drag in that fan base as well. But I think they're so sad at this point that maybe they wouldn't have even reacted at all.
That would have been funny. Maybe that might be a little too diabolical. In any case, I have my teams out there and people are going crazy, and I'm like, all right, cool. I'm not going to respond to any of you guys. I'm just going to make this a mini thread. And I put out my second tweet, which was my thought process on this. I was like, here's how I value the trade packages. The first thing I value, the most important thing I deem, is the strength of the centerpiece. Now, who is the centerpiece in the trade? Some of these teams have better centerpieces.
Or what, right?
What's that?
Or what, not just who.
Right. Or what is the centerpiece? Correct. Second thing I'm measuring the trade package on is the strength of their draft capital, both in this year's draft and in upcoming drafts, so the Pelicans can have sustainability going forward. The third thing that I'm ranking it on is everything else. So that's what I called it, which is role players, the ability to take contracts from the Pelicans like Solomon Hill, guys who can contribute now, maybe guys who can be flipped later, miscellaneous category, which I have as the third ranked thing. I don't know if everyone kind of agrees with the hierarchy of demands there when it comes to trade packages. I guess I can ask you, like, what are your thoughts on how you would grade a trade package? What do you look for, and what do you deem most important?
I mean, I think you're spot on with the number one factor, which is the centerpiece. I mean, it's the hardest thing to do to get a star. I mean, and it's once you got the star, it's the easier part is building out the rest of the roster. Obviously, that changes when players have contract extensions that are suddenly take up more higher percentage of the cap. But I think in the Pelicans situation where you've got a foundational piece like Zion, you've got the one guy who's making a nice chunk of change in Jrue Holiday, but he's worth every penny. And then everything else, I mean, you have the wiggle room even around those two guys under the salary cap to really build around it. And so I think, I mean, even in any situation, I think the centerpiece is the most important, but even in the Pelicans case specifically, I think it's even more so. And having that foundation, those two players or three players to grow together and help see this whole franchise grow. I mean, the part I'm back and forth on is the rest of it. And so, I mean, I think draft capital over everything else is, generally speaking, correct. But I think there's you could add a little bit more nuance to it. And not to say that I know you and I have talked about this and you've done it in your head, but the secondary asset maybe might not be draft capital. It might be something else. And so I think, I don't know. I think maybe there's an extra layer there between like the centerpiece is number one, and there's the secondary piece, which is number two, or maybe coupled with draft capital, and then everything else. Because I mean, I laughed when I saw your ranking of the Knicks everything else, and I was like, 5 actually maybe seems a little high, but depends on what you lump into everything else, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you generally there. For me, so I guess we can go into how I broke down these packages. And first, I guess I'll start with Boston. I guess we'll start with the centerpieces. I deemed the centerpiece of the Boston trade Jason Tatum. because I think he is the best asset they have. I think he has the most potential out of any of their individual pieces for becoming a star. I still think out of any of the pieces available on this board, out of these five teams, he has the highest chance of becoming this all-star player that the Pelicans might want to look out for.
We're in agreement there.
So I had a ranking system. I try to quantify it. In reality, these numbers are pulled out of my ass, but whatever. We're going to quantify it. There's a ranking system out of 10, and I had Tatum as an 8 out of 10, which I felt was fair. Knicks centerpiece I have as their number 3 pick. That is the centerpiece of their trade. I don't, you know, Knox, Dennis Smith, Mitchell Robinson, all those guys, that's everything else. Whatever. Number 3 pick, I graded as a 7.5 because, one, I'm very high on RJ Barrett, higher than I think most people. I think he can be a very good player. I would love to see him next to Zion. I'd love to see those two guys for the next 7 years playing together. But two, I think as a prospect, he's not that far off from Tatum. And the two additional years of cost control kind of help level the playing field for me. And three, there is an outside chance, although extremely minimal, and I don't want to get anyone's hope up, and I'm not going to peddle this, but there is an outside chance that for whatever reason, Memphis goes, we're going to take Barrett or Culver or whoever at 2, and Morant drops to number 3. That's another piece I'd want from the Knicks there. So Knicks got a 7.5.
Just, yeah, before we move on, is there – let's say that happens. Do you keep that pick? Or just since due to how high it seems like the rest of the league values Morant, do you consider moving it for – I mean, I know it's a hard hypothetical because you have no idea what you could get for that pick. But, I mean, it's got to be a consideration, right? I mean, at least looking and seeing what's out there. Or do you think you instantly just pair Morant with Zion and move on?
Yeah, I think it makes me pause. It definitely makes me pause. I think it'd be foolish not to see what he can get. I wouldn't overthink it. I would,
right.
You know, if a deal emerges that is spectacular, sure, take it. But I'm not going to dwell too much on it. I mean, it's Morant. You're going to take him, pairing him and Zion for the next 7-8 years would be great.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, for sure. You'd explore it, but you'd basically tell a team, wow me, because
– Bradley Beal?
Hoo-hoo-hoo, you know, I like Bradley Beal. I think I don't know if the Wizards want to throw in 9. Sure, we'll give them expirings and 3. If they want to throw in 9 and Bradley Beal,
and we get rid of Etuan Moore in that deal. It's a perfect deal for you, man.
Don't have to sell me on this. And then you still get the everything else to kind of deal with. Anywho, whatever. Knicks have a 7.5 out of 10. The next I have is the Clippers, and I have their centerpiece as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Really?
Who do you have as their centerpiece?
It's not the pick? The Miami Unprotected?
No. Now, to me, that's probably going to be between 10 and 20, which is fine.
Interesting. I'm with you when I don't think it's going to be a major, like a top 5 pick. But, so here's the thing. The new draft system, it's just, I'm not as convinced that pick won't be good. Just because, I mean, you've got the chance and you could always move it. I think in terms of asset or like just – You've said, I think you said it recently on Twitter, talking about you don't care what the trade, what the players are look like for AD. You just want to get the best best assets is what you said, I think.
Correct.
And I feel like league-wide, that Miami pick might be valued higher than Alexander. And I'm not even saying I feel that way. I'm not sure. I'm going back and forth on this, but I think the league at whole might value that pick, that potential pick, higher than given Miami's cap situation and no easy way out of that. I don't know. It's an interesting debate, I guess.
No, I don't think they need to worry about an easy way out. It's the 2021 pick, and that's what, 3 years from now, 2 years from now. They only have $70 million on the books that year. These contracts don't last forever.
But it's $70 million of garbage.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the moves they make, they have James Johnson if he opts in, Kelly Olynyk if he opts in, Deion Waiters, which is like gross. But then you have Richardson, Winslow, and Adebayo who are fine. And you have cap space, which Miami is an attractive situation, and they can kind of fill it out. So I think, I don't know, I think Miami is too well run of an organization for you to truly, truly value that. And I think Gilgeous Alexander is good enough of a prospect. I have him 7 out of 10. So I have him half a step behind Barrett. I think he's good. I think he's real solid. I definitely see what people talk about in, you know, he has Drew-like upside. So if the best player in the AD trade became a Drew-level player, which is, you know, borderline top 20, I think that's a get.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty strongly in lockstep on our overall rating of some of the draft or some of the assets in play for AD. I think that's where the first place where we differ, because I like him, but I'm not sure I'm not at half a point behind Barrett like him. I think the gap there is a little bit wider than you do, but good. I don't want us to agree on absolutely everything. That's no fun.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't see him as an absolute must-have talent. I think that his two games against Golden State are grossly overrated compared to the body of work he put together this season. But at the same time, I do think he is a rather complete player, and you can project a path forward for him to be a really successful one, because he can make an impact on the defensive end, and he can be a crafty scorer, and he can play make, which are kind of the things NBA players do to succeed. Mm-hmm. In any case, my next team were the Lakers. I have the number 4 pick as their centerpiece. And I feel like that is going to be a cause of disagreement for a lot of people. But I think the only other thing you could argue as a centerpiece is Ingram.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm already on record saying I rather Lonzo than Ingram. Even with the baggage that comes along with Lonzo, I just think Lonzo is a better – I trust Lonzo's chance to be a good player more. But I think Ingram's got a better chance of figuring out becoming a great player, but I don't think – I think there's a much higher chance that he just never figures it out. And so I like Lonzo better, but I think I – which is wildly depressing that I agree with you that the number 4 pick is their centerpiece rather than either one of those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go into my thoughts on either of those players too much. It's just, for me, the biggest differentiating factor between him and Ingram is you get 1 year of cost control on Ingram. And I do not want to max out that player, given what I've seen on his on-court production and given potential health risks that he may have. Now, they're saying his health shouldn't be an issue going forward, which, you know, if he gets the Aaron Nelson stamp of approval, I will gladly get behind that. But yep. I just haven't seen enough of him when it comes to actually doing things on the court to where I'm like, yeah, you know, I really want to commit long-term money to this dude. That's my thoughts on him. So the 4 pick, and I have that as a 6 out of 10. Squarely behind Gilgeous Alexander and the 3 pick. So there's a 1.5 point differential between the 3 pick and the 4 pick.
I think, honestly, that feels almost a little light to me. But
the reason I didn't make it a drastic one is I'm pretty high on Jarrett Culver. I think he can be a successful player, a very successful player. I think he has he's a very toolsy wing, and I really like his defensive potential. I like that he can play make for others. He finishes well at the rim. He's crafty. The biggest thing that scares me about him is his jump shot. So if he can figure out his jump shot, I think there's a solid player in there.
So that's cool. You just described Stanley Johnson.
Yikes. Stanley Johnson cannot dribble. Stanley Johnson
can't. Point Stanley, man. We saw Point Stanley. Oh, my
God. I can't believe you said this. Ugh. Anywho, I have the Brooklyn Nets as five when it comes to the centerpiece. And it took me a really long time to figure out who I want as their centerpiece. And the answer I arrived to was Jared Allen. That is their centerpiece, which is
That, whatever noise that is probably the right one. So I like it.
Who else could be their centerpiece? You could say D'Angelo Russell, but D'Angelo Russell, to me, the whole situation is weird because of the sign and trade. He would have to agree to come to New Orleans, and it would more than likely be for a maximum contract, and one that diminishes the value. Two, if it's a sign and trade, you're kind of helping them out rather than they are helping you out, in my opinion. And I don't know. I guess you could argue him as a centerpiece. I wouldn't be too upset just because of the cap difficulties that it causes and the fact that you have to max him and the issues that he comes with. At most, I would put him at a six. But I'm going to have Jared Allen as a centerpiece at five.
No one else you're considering as a centerpiece?
Nope. Really? LeVert, I would not consider a centerpiece. I think he's a good player. He's like 25 years old, 24. He's like a year at most younger than AD. And then you have to also pay him in a year. So it's like he's good.
The difference between us with Alexander, I think, is flipped for LeVert. Because I like him a lot. I don't know if he's the centerpiece over Jared Allen, but I don't know. I mean, I really strongly lean towards it. And the thing is, like, I know you have to pay him in a year, but if he proves it, then I don't know. I feel like you'll know. Like, with the way just how – his game has evolved over the last couple of years. And I know he had the injury setback this year. But I think one more year is really all you need with his game to know if he's going to be worth that next contract. And so the age concern is the main thing, I think, as far as making him the centerpiece of that deal. And regardless, I agree with you that, I mean, I go back and forth between which centerpiece is worse between them and the Lakers, but they're clearly 4 and 5, I think, out of the five teams. But I'm higher on him, I think.
That's fine. I'm not going to fight with you on that. That's fine. I like Allen. I think he has unicorn-y potential. He hasn't stepped out much yet, but he has solid free throw shooting percentages. And the idea of Jared Allen becoming someone who can hit a pick-and-pop jumper is not far-fetched. And I think he has the potential to be one of the top defensive big men in the league. So I had him as my centerpiece. In any case, I had them, the Brooklyn Nets, at 5 out of 10, which if you put your value at LeVert close to Gilgeous Alexander, would you have him at a 7?
No. Sorry. I just meant like our perspectives are flipped. Like, I feel like since you're higher on Alexander, I'm definitely higher on LeVert, but I think 5 out of 10 is fair for either one of those guys. I still think they're like, I would consider putting LeVert as a better prospect than the number 4 pick, or even not just the number 4 pick.
Oh, wow.
Also Jared Allen. I think either one of those guys I would put up against the 4 pick, just because I'm not that high on this draft outside of the top 3.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I'm not putting either of those guys in the Nets over the Clippers or the Celtics or Knicks.
Sure, I think that's a fair take.
When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. Time consuming, expensive. So many carriers to choose from. How do you know you're making the best choice? That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. And right now, Blue Wire podcast listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use promo code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best ship rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com, then enter promo code BLUE. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen. At Blue Wire, we don't just partner with any advertiser. We want to make sure we're giving our listeners a good deal on a product. That's exactly why we love doing business with Harry's. Harry's is giving Blue Wire listeners a shaving kit for just $3. Go to harrys.com/bluewire and you'll save $10 on a trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. If you're not familiar with Harry's, it's time you should be. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
So the next component of my draft evaluation was draft capital. And I did similar rankings for these players. Now, for these teams. Now, if your top pick was the centerpiece, I did not include it in, as part of draft capital. Because I'm assuming that piece is going to become that player and that's the centerpiece, you know? Mm-hmm. So the Boston Celtics I had as a 7.5 because they can offer you the 14, 20, 22 Memphis pick as well as any future Boston picks. Mm-hmm. So 7.5 for the Boston Celtics. I had the Knicks surprisingly only slightly below them at 7. Because I think those Dallas picks are going to be roughly equivalent to the 14-20-22 zone that the Celtics have in their current crop of picks. And I like the fact that they're further out and staggered, so I give more value to that than kind of consolidating all of the draft picks in a single draft year. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you kind of bank on the Knicks screwing things up and their own future picks being worth more than the Celtics. Like, you know, if the Knicks were to trade you a far out pick like 2024 or 2025, you could see them being bad. With the Celtics, you feel like they're going to find a way to sustain some way somehow. But in any case, my major differentiator with those two teams was I think the Memphis pick is more valuable than any of the picks either team can trade, but New York being able to stagger its picks further out made it more attractive and covered up ground. So Boston 7.5, New York 7. Any disagreements there?
No, I like your rationale on the difference between the two being so close. I'm with you. Like I'm not that excited about having three mid to late first round picks in this draft. Obviously the Memphis one is looking nice. I'm not quite as pessimistic on the Knicks as you are in the future. But I think that's enough. There's enough of a chance there that they still are terrible to make that, to bump them in their value. And I also, and I'm with you on the fact that I think Dallas is going to be good. I just think Doncic and Porzingis are a pretty solid foundation. I'm not as worried as others about Porzingis' injury and his long-term health, but maybe I should be. I'm not super high on those picks, but I think them coupled with the Knicks picks, there's enough chance there to make it good.
Yeah, my rationale with Dallas was, you know, let's say both those picks, I think it's the 21 and 23, I forget what exact years they were, but let's say both those picks come out to pick 22. I would rather have pick 22 in two future years than 20 and 22 in a single year. You know, and that would mean Dallas is the 8th best team in the league.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. I think there's a general rule of thumb where you value the future picks have a slightly higher value than later picks, but I think that on the contrary, this draft isn't really viewed that highly by people. So I think it makes sense.
Okay, cool. So the Clippers, I didn't have that far behind the Knicks. I had the Clippers at 6.5. They have all their own future picks to offer, which, you know, fine. Any of these teams that get Davis, their future picks, you can kind of write them off as late first. So I project them out to 20, 25 and above. That's all even for all these teams. Now, the way Clippers kind of differentiate themselves is they have the Philly pick for 2020, which, again, is a pick in a future year. And then they have the Miami pick that we talked about in 2021, which can potentially be valuable. Even though I don't value as high as you do, it has value, and it might have league-wide value, like you were mentioning. So I had him at a 6.5 out of 10, slightly below the Knicks.
Okay.
I might
be a little bit higher, but again, only because of the Miami pick. But yeah, that makes sense.
Now I had the Lakers. Did you see my graph by any chance?
Nope.
Okay, great. You want to guess what I had the Lakers at?
Well, see, so this is a catch-22 because the lower you have the Lakers means the better you expect them to be long term. It'd be really funny if you have it at like an 8, but I don't think that you do because we're going down. You probably have them pretty low if you're getting AD and pairing AD with LeBron. So something low.
I have them at a 4.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a metaphor because I think if you get AD and LeBron, they're going to get more people. But also once AD is in LA, they're going to get that next star, right? So once LeBron is done and declining, AD is locked up. Having a star in LA is going to be enough to attract more stars in the future. That's my thought. And I think that's what the Lakers thought.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important part of this whole AD trade scenario is just the fact that this could be the Lakers' only shot to get, because if they don't trade for AD, there's a reasonable chance that they don't get another star or a guy that like at a star level that would consider Lakers fans would consider acceptable. So they've got to empty the, even though despite all the issues with between these two teams closer to the trade deadline, they've got to empty the clip again, just because things have not gotten better for them since the trade deadline. Other bad things have happened. I mean, they've made some, no, I don't know if anything's gone right for them, really. Apart from getting the 4 pick, that was pretty fortuitous for them. But yeah, I mean, they've got to go all out for AD. And if they're going all out for AD, that at least sets the bar somewhere for other teams. And so I don't know. I feel that it helps me feel a little better about even in a market where maybe Kyrie does leave Boston.
I'm going to be so sad when the Lakers trade for my boy Bradley Beal. It's going to be a bad day for me. In any case, the Nets draft capital I had as a 5.5. They don't have many attractive picks of their own, in my opinion. They have this year's pick, which I think is 17, and then they have 27 from Denver, which is cool, 2 picks in this draft, and then going forward, they only have their own picks, which is meh. Well, what was it? What was the sound I made for Jared Allen? I'm like, meh.
I can't replicate it.
Sure, that thing. So that's the Nets, which they're not doing too well for me in terms of this. Now, let's get to the everything else category. This is the miscellaneous category. This is where teams can kind of put themselves over the top. Going back to the Celtics, in the everything else category, I have them as potentially being able to give up. Not saying they're going to give up all of these, but this is based on kind of like the potential of what they might, you know, the grab bag of things, of goodies that you can draw from. So they have Jaylen Brown. They have Marcus Smart. They have Robert Williams. Those are the three main ones. You could kind of talk yourself into Hayward. I won't.
You shouldn't.
I won't.
Just because of the money that's tied to him.
They have the ability to, you know, flip a guy like Brown, who may be valued to other teams, and get back more assets or a better player that fits you better. They have what else did they have? I think that's about it. So Jaylen Brown, Robert Williams, Marcus Smart, and they have the ability to get funky with salary. They can take on Solomon Hill or Etuan Moore, by mixing and matching, you know, a couple of things here or there. So I had him as an 8 out of 10, similar to what I had Tatum, because Brown, I think, is valued. I think Smart is pretty valued. And I think Robert Williams is underrated. People talk about Mitchell Robinson. I think they had a very similar statistical profile. I think Williams just had a less of a runway to go out and do things on the court, like not foul out in 9 minutes.
I'm not calling him Time Lord. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, Robert Williams the III. So I had him at an 8. Do you disagree?
No, I think that makes sense. And I mean, everything's relative, right? I mean, like, it's hard to know what we're comparing to for that 8. So is it we're just comparing against the other four teams, or we're comparing against the entire league? But I mean, like, generally speaking, I think that's fair.
Okay, cool. I had the Knicks, everything else, as 5.
It's generous.
Because I think Dennis Smith and Kevin Knox and Frank Ntilikina are not great. And I think that Mitchell Robinson might be the most attractive piece out of them, but I'm not the highest on him. He still has a long ways to go. And ultimately, what is his ceiling? Can he be a player that you trust in the playoffs to not get run off the court by smaller teams? I don't know if we've seen that yet, and it may be unfair for me to kind of put that on him, but overall, the Knicks, unless they are just kind of taking Davis into space and opening up a ton of cap room for the Pelicans, they don't really have much in the miscellaneous category that they can offer, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I would have gone as high as 5, but,
cool.
I think we generally agree on
that. I have the Clippers as 6. And the most intriguing piece for me in the Clippers is Landry Shamet. I think he is going to be a really good shooter in this league. I think he's going to be like JJ Redick. But other than that, you have Lou Will and Harrell and Gallinari, which are great. They're going to be great role players and good vets to have on a team. But ultimately, what does that do for your future? They're just going to come out here, play their contract out for a couple of years, in my opinion, and just bounce. So you're competitive in the short term, but as far as sustainability goes, which is really what I'm looking for when it comes to these packages, what do they do for you? Unless you have the ability to flip them to other teams, right, for additional assets, which,
yeah,
and the trickiness of it, you know, I have them at a 6, which is not bad, but it's not great.
Yeah. And I think that's, I would have the Clippers a little bit higher, just because of that. I think as assets, like a guy like Harrell, while maybe doesn't fit exactly with the Pelicans timeline, I think has immense value, maybe to a different team. And so, I mean, I don't, they're not higher than Boston in my opinion, but I think I'd probably push him out something like 7.
Okay. That's fair. If you push him to 7, I think that breaks their average with the Knicks. So they would be the second highest rated package, but we can talk about that in a second. 4th. So we talk about the Lakers. I had the Lakers, everything else, at a 9.5. It's the highest individual rating out of anything.
I mean, so if the centerpiece is the 4 pick, yep, that means that every player in the package is everything else. And so I think that's fair, right?
Yep. Ingram, Ball, Kuzma, Hart, as well as whatever they want to do with Solo Hill or get creative in any sort of way where they're flipping Lonzo for the 6 or 7 pick and bringing back more. I think you can get extremely versatile.
And this maybe realize a flaw in your rating system. your back of the napkin rating system is that it devalues the team. Doesn't it devalue the teams that have the centerpieces as draft pick?
I prefer spreadsheet on a phone rating system. Okay. I put a hard work into this. No, I think it does kind of devalue it a bit, but ultimately I don't think that, I'm having a tough way of putting this. So I think you can flip these guys like Ingram and Ball and whatnot for other assets, but I don't value that in terms of them getting a centerpiece. So I went back and waited all these other things. And I think they can bring you things that fit better, may help you now, but I don't think any individual one of those players necessarily increase my chance at landing that one all-star that's really going to define the trade. That's kind of my thinking about it. So like if I flip Lonzo Ball for the seventh pick and you draft DeAndre Hunter, great. You know, you can increase the draft capital rating there. Mm-hmm. Fine. But, you know, does it move the needle? Does it make the centerpiece better? I don't think so. Now, the one exception is, can the Lakers players land you Bradley Beal? He's always the exception. Okay, I had to slip that in there. Because then if he's the centerpiece of the trade, then things change. I would have him as a 9 out of 10 as the centerpiece. Fair. So my Lakers ratings are preliminary, and they have the potential to be great. Is that fair?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I have their everything else as a 9.5, which shows the strength of them being able to do that. But because it may be difficult to kind of involve all these other teams and do all these complicated trades, I'm leaving that in the everything else category rather than just by default assigning it to the centerpiece or draft capital category. So Lakers, they're at where they're at. Brooklyn Nets, everything else. I had as an 8, similar to Boston.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the one thing I'm not totally sure on, and we need to look, is the ages of those guys. Because I know they're deep in terms of guys who are raw and are growing as players. But I don't know if those are like 4-year college guys that just came out after 1 year. I haven't looked at the ages of those dudes. But generally speaking, I think, yeah, they've got a lot of youngish talent that would make sense to bring over.
They're youngish in terms of age, but they're youngish in terms of career as well. So, you know, they have Dinwiddie, who's 25, LeVert, who's 24, Kirks, who's 20. Mm-hmm. And those are like the three main young players. And then, you know, they can get creative with the role players with Joe Harris, who's only 27. Mm-hmm. And who else do they got? I think that's about it. I mean, they can include Alan Crabb as a big expiring if they want to, but he's Alan Crabb. He's right. Fine. So the Nets, I think they have a good collection of everything else. I don't think they have the strength of the Lakers in terms of I could flip LeVert and get back something of really high value like I could with Ingram or Ball. But I think that they make you a solid team of right now. And they are young enough to where, I mean, a lot of these guys are cost controlled. Dinwiddie just signed a extension. Harris is on a short, I guess he's not on that long of a deal. But, you know, Harris has a deal. LeVert, you have bird rights on. You can do things with. And Kirks is on his rookie scale contract. So there's a lot more control going forward. And that ties into the sustainability that I was looking for. So the averages of all these teams came out to me. So the Celtics came out to an average of 7.83. 3-3-3-3, repeating. The Knicks, the Clippers, and the Lakers were tied at 6.5. And the Nets were at 6.16. 6-6-6, repeating. So the tiebreaker for me was a centerpiece. And so I weighted each category. I weighted the centerpiece category as 10% more valuable than standard. I weighted the draft capital category as 5% more valuable than standard. And everything category was just standard. So if it was 8, it'd be 8 instead of 5% higher than 8. Based on that, the tiebreakers came out to Knicks having the second best package after Boston, which there was a big jump. The Clippers being extremely close to the Knicks. The Lakers being not too far off. And the Nets kind of just being in fifth place. So that was my methodology. I felt like you know, for a quick little scheme, it was, I don't know, organized.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all lays out about the way people would expect. I would, like we talked about at the start, I would probably bump up centerpiece a little bit more, just because I think it's so important. That's what any team looking to, when they're forced to trade a superstar, is trying to get. But other than that, I mean, I don't think all that would do is push up the Celtics even higher, which we already know they're the leading candidate. And then, I mean, to me, it would create a little bit more separation between the Knicks and the Clippers. But I do think that is closer than maybe a lot of people might think. And I also do think maybe Brooklyn is a little closer than the Lakers. I think Lakers are 4 and Brooklyn's 5. I think that's fair. But I think that might be a little bit tighter than people would expect too, just because I don't really know what the centerpiece is for the Lakers deal. And I think there are a couple of –
I see them. So I think each team can kind of elevate themselves except for Boston, which Boston is.
I don't think Lakers can elevate them to 3. I really don't.
I think they can.
Really?
I think the Lakers and the Knicks have the right amount of desperation. And you can kind of include the Clippers, but the right amount of desperation to kind of like fully Billy King themselves.
I guess, yeah. I guess I just meant like everyone puts their best offer on the table. I don't think there's any way the Lakers jump into the top 3. But I think the point you just made is very fair.
I think they have the right amount of desperation to Billy King themselves. And I also think, you know, the Lakers, on top of that, if they can go get other pieces that fit better with some of the young players, they have the ability to kind of jump higher. The Clippers, I think, can be – I think Ballmer's desperate for getting a star, but he may not be that desperate if Kawhi's just like, hey, I'm coming, bro. Like, let's go. Or, you know, if Durant wants to come. But I do think – I mean, like, you put Kawhi on this year's Clippers team, like, that's just an absurd team. So, like, why would he kind of sell the house for this? But the Nets, you know, I don't think they would Billy King themselves because
they've already done it before. Billy King themselves.
So they can elevate their ceiling. Here's how I see the Nets elevating their ceiling: is they do the D'Angelo Russell stuff. You do the sign and trade. And when you're signing and trading for D'Angelo Russell, you're taking back guys like Solomon Hill and whatnot. It has to be a separate trade because they can't, you know, attach someone to Russell. So it'd have to be two separate trades. So the Russell component, they take back Solomon Hill and whoever if they need to. And then you do a Davis trade simultaneously side by side, and you get back all the other pieces that you want. So you get Russell and you get all those other pieces and you get the picks. And then, you know, the Nets kind of make sense. But I think they're going to be cautious simply because they don't want to Billy King themselves.
Yeah, I think that. And the other wrench that could be thrown into this is if any team kind of gets a sort of commitment from AD, that's beyond the season. I think that changes things. But we haven't really seen anything that would indicate that being likely.
Cool. So I think that's enough for today. We kind of re-broke down trade packages, but try to quantify them this time. Yep. And I don't know. Hopefully there'll be more news now that talks have started up.
Yeah. And again, I sent a tweet out, but we I just want to say thanks to everybody again, because we had our best month by far since Schmidt and I started doing this. And I mean, some of it was obviously the Zion pick, but also it wasn't just that. I mean, the numbers tell a story, and we just can't thank everybody enough. If you like the podcast, please recommend it to others. Get people excited about basketball in New Orleans more than they already are. But we, you know, we'd love to bring on new listeners, and just really appreciate everything.
Yes, thank you so much for making this happen for us.